Hey, we need your support to keep the podcasts flowing. Go to explorationsearlylearning.com/support to learn how. One of the big things you can do is shop Amazon with the link we provide. You buy your cat food, you buy your kids' books, you buy whatever it is you buy on Amazon, you pay the regular price. We get a small percentage of it. Everybody wins. A lot of people are doing it. It really supports the shows, and we really appreciate it. Give it a try. Thanks.
Welcome to the Child Care Bar and Grill Podcast. Jeff Johnson coming to you live from upstairs studios. Hey, people, we're spinning all the hits today. In studio with me is Lisa Murphy.
Hello.
And on sound effects, Tasha Johnson.
Woo!
That was a sound effect. See, people, that's improv. Hey,
aloha.
We're talking more Mildred Patton, who's not related.
Parton.
And not related to Dolly.
No. Different spelling.
Different. Well, I mean, sometimes over the generations, name spellings change, so there might be a relationship there. They didn't. I saw no family resemblance. Before we get into this, I mentioned on the first episode of the series that I thought there was a Piaget-Mildred connection. I was wrong. That was Sarah Smolansky. Did I say it right? Except not slow like that. That's not quite right. Smolansky. And we'll be getting to Sarah in future episodes of our trying to define and understand play multi-series series. It's a series of series. Right now.
It's spinoffs.
So Sarah is the one that had the collaboration with Piaget, not Mildred. Second thing, something that came up during our pod break was the idea of early
break.
Learning.
You got a break.
I didn't get a break. I did computer stuff. I went to the shop for all. You just made chili. Now we got to wait 3 hours before we can eat it.
Tasha made me cry.
Anyway.
She didn't really. It was the onion.
The idea of early childhood icon fan fiction came up because I happen to know a handful of early learning nerds. I messaged them during the break to ask them to look for or write this fan fiction. I know there's some fan fiction people out there. Didn't know what fan fiction was. Until I met them. So we're going to try to come up with some early learning fan fiction, maybe a couple paragraphs, you know, like Maria Montessori meets Piaget or something like that. And they got some, or yeah, we'll figure it out. You might not enjoy it, but we will. So before we get into onlooker play, can we do a quick recap?
Sure.
That's something we, it's episode 3 of the series. It's probably recap time.
Recapping the Partons, Mildred Parton's stages of play. The first one is called unoccupied play, when the child is not necessarily playing, but the child is observing. So a child might be standing in one spot or performing random movements. If you think of a little baby, you know, kind of on the floor, waving their arms around. One of the websites said that it could be hard to believe, but the play actually starts at birth. And the random movements that infants make with no clear purpose might actually be the beginning of play. Unoccupied play. Next was solitary play, when the child is playing alone and might be either uninterested or unaware of what other kids are doing around them. It is more common in younger children as opposed to older ones.
And so Mildred, her belief was that children progressed through these stages. And although they may, as older children, engage in unoccupied or solitary play, they were more prevalent in younger children. As years have gone by, there's been some question whether that's as accurate as she may have thought it was.
But again,
in 1929, and of course, things evolve and change. But still, her six stages here are still pretty frequently referred to and widely used. And so number three is onlooker play. What is that?
Onlooker play is when the child watches others at play but does not engage in it. The child might engage in other forms of interaction, such as talking with the kids about what they're doing, what they're playing, but without actually joining in the activity. And also with the Wikipedia website, or the Wikipedia page site,
which
Wikipedia site said that
the page on the site,
this type of activity is more common in younger children. So that was from the Wikipedia page. And then we've also been referring to the encouragingplay.com page, and they have onlooker play happening more frequently during the toddler years, but it can happen at any age. This stage is when children watch others play. The child who is looking at the others who are playing might ask questions of the other kids, but there's no effort to join in. This may happen when a child is shy, unsure of the rules, or is hesitant to join the game. I would agree with that. I would add to it that it might not have anything to do with any insecurity or shyness or not sure of the rules or hesitation. It could just be that they're wanting to watch.
Yeah. It could be a temperament thing, too.
Sure.
It's not, yeah. So my question is how is onlooker play different from unoccupied play?
Well, I was kind of thinking about that myself, except if this is more of a chronological sequence of, mm-hmm. you know, you would have needed a starting spot. And mm-hmm. so thinking of an infant, I think it might be just that simple, that it might be similar. Well, actually, no, because unoccupied might be just totally by myself, whereas onlooker, you're still participating, but you might not actually be doing with the kids. Let's think of an actual example. It might be easier to talk about it. Somebody's watching kids do
Timmy,
what?
Timmy and Jenny are playing with Play-Doh, and Malik is watching.
Watching them?
Watching. Maybe.
And might even asking, you know, what are you making, or...
Or maybe he's watching them roll out the Play-Doh into like little snakes or balls and then starts imitating it. Would that be?
I think it's more that there's engaging, but more maybe language-based engagement as opposed mm-hmm. to physical engagement is how I'm understanding this.
Whereas in unoccupied, there's not that engagement.
Correct.
Okay, and so if we started out talking about unoccupied play having a relationship with Bob Hughes's dramatic play, but his definition of dramatic play is probably more closely related to onlooker mm-hmm. play.
And as a recap, his definition of that kind of play is where the child is actually watching some kind of watching a parade or a puppet show or something like that.
But
that's not necessarily, there might not be room for engagement in even a language
yeah.
like that. Whereas this one is saying, I might be, you know, what are you doing? Who did you get? Is that new? Did you get that? But I'm not touching the Play-Doh. Whereas with the dramatic play, you think there probably wouldn't be that kind of, it's where the child is more of a recipient,
yeah.
I think, of the drama.
Yeah. One part of me wishes this was all much simpler and clearer. And the bigger part of me is fascinated and really enjoys the nuance. And I just like picking these apart and having these conversations because I think it is kind of good reflective practice.
I think it also, sorry, I interrupted you. It's showing us as people who might have already been familiar with some of this language, but even more so people who weren't familiar with it prior, just the amount of depth mm-hmm. that's here, that at face value, even people who buy into a play-based environment might not necessarily appreciate some of the, you say nuances, but I mean, it can get very specific. I mean, we went through and did that. The Hughes thing.
Oh, yeah.
Brought you to tears.
It did. It, maybe that's what it was. Maybe I just got so overwhelmed.
Oh, yeah. There you go, yeah.
But there was a part of my brain like going, oh my God, you know, how are we going to slice and dice this thing to death? But then at the same time, I kind of appreciate that there's that much,
yeah.
that many layers to it all.
And so onlooker play, again, this is usually with younger children. And again, how do we support it? One of the things we do, I guess, is we try to slow down the rush to make them social mm. before they're ready to be social creatures, if we try to push them through this stage onto more social types of play, which I think happens in a fair amount of programs. There's why, and again, I've touched on it before. Why can't the toddler sit still for circle time, and why can't they stay at the table for activity time and that kind of stuff, and why don't they want to do my project, or why don't they care about the weather freaking laminates and that kind of stuff? Well, partly it's because that stuff is boring, and partly it's because they're just developmentally not there. And we do know, don't we, that trying to rush a kid through a thing actually makes it harder for them to master that when they get to it. And so one of the big things we do to support this is we are able to identify it, and then we just don't push.
And to not be in such a hurry to overthink it and make, like, jump to a conclusion that it's somehow negative.
Yeah, and we come up with a diagnosis.
This level of participation is equally weighted to the kids who are actually touching the Play-Doh.
Well, yeah, could it be like an aha moment for the teachers or something, going, hey, I observed this in the child.
Meaning like after listening to this and say, yes. Oh, so it's not that they're disengaged, mm-hmm. it's that they're perhaps engaging in onlooking
yes,
play, onlooker
yes.
play.
Yeah, so that they're not. The teacher can realize it and go, okay, so I don't need to be concerned or overly anxious or think they're
pushing
testing.
Them. Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's really important to stop and reflect on how much thinking, how much processing can be going on with a child, even a very yeah. young child, engaged in this kind of stuff. I've watched grandson Riker watch grandbaby Rowan, big sister, she's 5 and a half, he's just one, and he watches her do stuff, and it's like he's hypnotized sometimes, just mesmerized and fully engaged in attending to what she's doing. And I wish he was able to put words to it. Kind of like, hey, buddy, talk me through what's
yeah,
going
what's
on while you're watching.
Because,
I mean, I can guess, and I'm probably guessing wrong, and I'm probably simplifying it would be my...
Because it's probably a lot more sophisticated
than we actually
realize.
Give him credit
yeah.
for. And when you start getting into some of the stuff that Alison Gopnik gets mm-hmm. into in her research... You realize how much is going on in their nonverbal busy little brains, and so just being able to pull back and appreciate the depth and complexity of the engagement, that something that doesn't look engaged is it's fascinating.
When you were mentioning Riker looking up to Rowan, it made me wonder if mixed age groupings somehow, I don't want to say assist in this, but, you know, might you see more evidence of it when you have mixed ages together? I don't know.
Well, let's just unpack it. If you're in a mixed age group, you are seeing
probably
more,
a lot of this at the same time,
and there's a bigger likelihood that you're with people who are on different developmental levels than you are. If it's a room of 2 year olds, you're watching other kids watch you.
Yeah,
yeah. It's like a staring contest. Yeah, yeah. When they're all doing the same thing, you know, because they're two, but mixed age groups. Wow.
Okay, we got to role play this.
Okay,
we are toddlers.
We are.
Uh huh. And we just all got sat down on the fluffy circle rug.
Uh huh.
And
teacher Tasha is gonna do something or what?
No, all three of us are gonna be toddlers.
Oh, okay.
Because I already know what I have a problem with. So yeah.
Hey, what you guys doing?
Who are you talking to?
You guys, but what? This is like Rugrats. We can't Rugrats. We can't
Rugrats.
Really talk, but we're talking in our heads.
What our thoughts are.
Our
okay,
thoughts.
Gotcha.
Well,
got
I've been engaged in a lot of solitary play lately, and I'm trying to move beyond that into onlooker play. But you two are just staring at me. first off, I didn't pick. If you're staring because of this onesie, I didn't pick it up. My mom put me on in this thing today. Babe Megmint isn't my. I mean, that's not who I am. But her sister gave her the onesie, and she thinks I have to wear it anyway. I'm trying to gauge an onlooker play, and you guys aren't doing much. And I wonder if you could kick it up a notch.
Well, I'm touching the rug right now, and I don't like the texture of it. Touch the rug. It feels icky. It's fluffy.
Nobody vacuumed it. Awesome.
No, it's not. It's not vacuum dry. I found some
rice.
See? Ew. No. The teacher keeps making me sit back down, and I don't like the feel of it. God.
Hey, Red, what are you doing?
I'm actually totally out of my head right now, and I'm thinking exactly... Okay, pause. Sorry, I'm ruining that.
And scene.
Because that's actually where I was going with my comment, is that I didn't want to say, get them to the next stage, but I was in my head, I was thinking, if you had mixed ages, there would be more opportunity for a kid to, as you role play, to get to the... Yeah. I'm looking to get to the next level, man, and you can't. You guys are... You're not helping.
And they always are looking to get to the next level. They're always kids. I mean, they're not static. They're not sedentary in their development. They're always moving forward. And we don't always appreciate that takes time or the nuance involved in the process. And so when we can pull back, and I think there is, you see more versions of the future in a mixed age group.
Ooh.
Wow.
Did you just make that up? Write that down.
I'm gonna write it down. More versions of
TM. Trademark.
Shut up.
Write it down and mail it to me.
Hey, I taught you that.
And so, but I mean, you're just, and again, we've talked about this with biting. If you're in a room full of people that are biting, there's going to be a lot of biting going on.
Exactly.
And so when we're all on the same stage, and so going through this whole list, I think the fact that this is a set of stages children develop through, I think this is probably a good reason for supporting mixed age groups. And before we come back with another episode, we'll dig into that a little bit more, so we can maybe talk to that a little bit more in the next episode. But I don't remember being an onlooker player when I was a kid, and it would probably because it mostly happened at such an early age. I mean, I remember dramatic play, and I remember different types of.
I was told that I was a watcher, but then once I warmed up, then it was like a bull in a china shop, is what I've been told.
Well, I know I'm an onlooker still. I mean, I prefer to see what's happening, and if I feel comfortable enough to engage, then
you'll take that next step.
Yeah, otherwise, I'm perfectly fine sitting and watching.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sitting and watching with the language, like with that kind of, guys.
You know, if I feel like I can contribute to the conversation, or, you know, want something clarified, yes, I'll chime up.
They'll chime
or
in.
Agree, but I think kids are that way, too, once they gain that language.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. They feel more willing to participate and ask questions. Otherwise, it's more like just stare.
And I think then children might, depending on how adults respond to those observations, you could probably unintentionally end up shutting the kid down. You know, like if somehow it was, whether spoken or implied, that it wasn't okay. Like, it's like, sit down and do it. Like, if I as an adult don't see that standing there and observing is an acceptable level
in itself
of engagement, I can imagine scenarios where unintentionally it would be like, hey, sit down and come do this, and which the kid's like, I don't want to do it, but now the message is being sent that I gotta do it.
Now I gotta do it.
Oh, God.
Okay, it's hand turkey time in the toddler room for hand painting. You're Miss Lisa, the evil Miss Lisa, and you're trying to get me to.
Do you get to be like a different personality, Miss Liza? The evil Liza.
Can I pick a new name?
You have to have a goatee. Evil Lisa Murphy has a red goatee and a handlebar, a thin handlebar mustache.
You must pay the rent. Okay, Jeff, come here. It's your turn.
Oh, wait. Aren't you impressed that I'm 2.5 and I can whistle?
Oh, I am so impressed. Actually, there's no whistling in the classroom, so stop that and come over here, please. It's your turn.
Is it
the quiet spray?
I'm good. I'm good here.
But today is the day that everybody's making their handprint turkeys for our holiday feast.
I'm good with just watching, and apparently not everybody's doing it.
Well, but it's your turn. We're doing it one by one. So come on over and let me see your hand.
I pass.
Come on over.
Don't touch my hand.
Everybody's making one. I see. I hate doing this because it goes against every core of my being.
I exactly what I said. I hate doing this. It goes against everything that's the core of my being.
Soul cringing, like singeing around the edges.
But I've also seen teachers take the kid's damn hand.
Yeah, exactly.
And while the kid is like,
yeah,
like, by golly, we're going to make a print of this if it kills us all.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And seen. And so maybe one thing we take away from this is if they don't want to do it, don't fucking make them do it.
Exactly.
It's not complicated. And if you have coworkers that are doing that thing, maybe being able to have a civilized, you don't have to cuss at them like I do, may have a civilized conversation and say, hey, maybe they are just happy watching the handprint process
and then
matching the
I feel like I have a broken record sometimes is where did that come from that you think that everybody has to do it?
Yeah,
where did that come from?
Perceived?
Exactly. Is that a perceived expectation? Did you put it on your own self? Does it say on page 19 of the employee handbook that you have to do this?
Yeah. And just being aware of this, can help ease some parent worry, too, when they have kids that are in this stage. Just being able to explain to the parent that, hey, this is a thing that is, I mean, this happens at this age, and it's not a thing to worry about. If it is still happening when they're 14... Well, maybe we are concerned. Maybe there are going to be other...
I don't know if I would necessarily be concerned.
I mean, maybe the language is if we see other red flags, there might be...
Like what we talked about in the last episode is this child playing by themselves because they want to?
Yes.
Or are they playing by themselves because they don't have the tools to enter into the play? So, yes, gathering a little bit more data before jumping to a conclusion.
And before we wrapped it up, there's another thing I wanted to touch on. This says, this may happen, this onlooker play, may happen when a child is shy or unsure of the rules or hesitant to join the game. Now, how do we differentiate? Now, if it's a child who is shy or unsure of the rules or hesitant to join the game, or if it's just a child who doesn't want, is not shy and... is there a differentiation we need to make where we are doing things to nudge kids along in one situation?
Well,
and not
that's your
others,
Vygotsky. That's your Vygotsky. That's the zone of proximal development, right? That this is what the child is doing on their own, and this is what they're able to do with some assistance. That's going to be a case by case. It's totally knowing the child. Like, am I nudging? Because I feel that the child should be sitting down and playing with the Play-Doh, or am I nudging because I've watched this kid kind of creep a little closer and a little closer and just maybe isn't sure how to initiate joining the group?
Yeah.
And that, again, 100% is going to be case by case. It would be a lot easier for us to be able to say, here's the criteria of when to move in and when to leave it alone. But the reality is that it's sloppy.
And so, like in so many other situations, it's
the
best thing you can do is you can build those relationships, and then you're more apt to pick up on the signals and be able to deal.
But then
with
I'll go
things.
Back to what you said too about Where was that? Where's that shy onlooker? Oh, was that came off of the encourageplay.com?
Yes.
So, and even if you think that. I'm going to push you. Why? What is leading you to make the call of shy? You know, like what information do you have?
Mm-hmm.
Unsure of the rules? Like, is that because it's their first day of school? Or, you know, how did you come to that place? Mm-hmm. And just, I guess I'm reminding listeners that that is important.
So taking that pause, you like to
exactly.
Say. Yeah.
How are you coming to the conclusion that this kid is shy? How did you get there?
Yeah. All right. Anything else on this one?
As we're talking it through, I'm kind of starting to see in my own brain the progression of how onlooker play, how one starts into the next. Yeah. I'm starting to see that a little clearer in my head. Specifically with that Play-Doh example, like onlooker play. So I'm watching you do it. I might be talking to you about it. Mm-hmm. And then when I'm ready, then, you know, maybe tomorrow I'm sitting down next to you, parallel play, right? Yep. Getting ahead of myself. But yeah, I'm starting to see it a little clearer.
If a child doesn't grow out of onlooker play, do they become stalkers or spies?
Ooh, I don't know. Google that.
Yeah, we'll have to check that out. Maybe we can work that into the fan fiction somehow.
Ooh, if there was like an arrested development there, if they just locked
there.
And loaded on onlooker play. Ooh. It's the dark side.
New on HBO, The Onlooker.
He's a 7-year-old.
Just sitting there with the
binoculars.
Binoculars, an Encyclopedia Brown notebook, and like jotting down notes and everything. There's some more. Somebody write that fan fiction or do an illustration. Hey, thanks for tuning into the show. We appreciate you listening. We appreciate you sharing the show. We appreciate you supporting the show. You can do that at playvolutionhq.com/support. Lots of ways. Just share and tell them. If you like the show and you got a friend that might like the show, share the show. I mean, maybe not this episode, but one of them that you really, I don't know which, you know the episode. We should really put together a reel. Like our nearly 400 episodes are our best 3 minutes.
Oof, that'd be hard.
Because there's so many, or we'd have to really look to find 3 good minutes.
Yes.
Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.
Oh.
Hey, Jeff here. If you like the podcast, you might dig this. Dan Hodgins is going to join Lisa Murphy and I for 3 gigs in 2018. We're going to be in Portland, Oregon, Indianapolis, Indiana, and Madison, Wisconsin. We're calling it the Talking Play Tour because that's what we're going to be doing, talk and play. You can learn more at playvolutionhq.com/events. Hope to see you there.